Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, I know for pretty much any parent, and not just parent listening, I mean, my son is with his grandparents at the moment. One of the things that I think is really difficult is screens, screen time, computers, and not just saying how can we get our kids to use them less, but also just trying to keep up in terms of online safety and keeping up with the rate of how fast this technology is changing. And I mean, I'm surprised all the time when there's stories about, you know, a new app or game that might have sort of really inappropriate content that I've not heard of, and I would still consider myself a young-ish person, and I'm not able to stay ahead of these trends, and I'm, you know, reading this stuff every day, and I think that's something that parents really struggle with. So how can parents actually alleviate some of these concerns? Well, our next guest has some really good ideas and tips and products that are basically there for just that, to try and help you manage and monitor your household's internet use. With us in studio to give us some advice, we have Graeme Mulhern, Technology Specialist and CEO at Be Secure Online. Graeme, good morning and thanks for coming into Spirit Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you, Wendy.
So in terms of probably the people that are coming to you, is that the big thing, just parents that are just concerned about how do I actually keep my family safe with just, there's just so much technology out there from where it can be accessed, you know, phones, iPads, laptops, desktop PCs. That's before you even get into what's on the screens in the first place.
Yeah, sure. And this all started, Wendy, back about 12 years ago. And would you believe it's 12 years since these things, the iPhones, were introduced. And I think they first went on sale in June of 07, having been introduced at Apple World in January of 07. And the first thing the ISPs, which are the internet companies, noticed was a huge increase or a near doubling in the use of the internet by people who were connecting to the internet on handheld devices or the smartphone.
So it was a very quick shift in a short space of time.
Absolutely. It was literally overnight, and the adoption rate caught everybody off guard. And you now have possibly 2 billion Android, mainly Samsung devices, and Apple sell 40 to 60 million units a quarter. So there's a billion iPhones out there. That's more smartphones than there are people on the planet. That's 5 to 10 devices in every house. That's the average adult having maybe 3 to 4 devices in their life. And they are being overwhelmed. I mean, every day of the week, even distractions for employers, like booking a Ryanair flight when you're at work, which, by the way, is strictly illegal in Germany, where you distract yourself from your main work task. You know, there's 25 minutes the employer's just paid for, plus the cup of tea afterwards and the walk around, and 20 minutes to refocus. And all of the well-being effects, all of the primary school and the secondary school, and the schools are doing a great job there, by the way. But the first piece of advice that I would have for parents is get the same phone for everybody in the house. Don't have different phones.
So you can understand how it works, basically.
So that when you're naturally using your phone, when you're not even researching, you just come across tips. No point giving your kid a Samsung when you've got an iPhone, particularly when you're not all that up on it. So if you've got a Google phone, get your kids an Android device, a Samsung, a Nokia, or whatever. But let's have all the same phones. That's a great place to start. Simple tip.
And just so because, I mean, it's a very interesting point that I actually hadn't thought of, because it is funny when someone else has a different phone and you're trying to figure it out, because they're easy in one, maybe very complicated in another. Is there enough talk, Graeme, at the moment about, just even among parents, or awareness about, actually there is things that you can implement in your house to try and make the internet a safer place to navigate?
Yeah. Well, before we get to what I do for a living and all of that, and the products that we sell, there's a lot. And there's a lot you can do for free. And there's a lot you can do without reading very much. But most of these devices are improving their parental control. And when you're using the parental control, you're getting banking protection, you're getting antivirus, malware protection, all that sort of good stuff. And it's actually quite cheap if you want to buy it. But parental control is there, and you can Google how to install it. But it's pretty easy on the Apple, and it's very easy on the Samsung devices. And that's for free. And some of that will allow you to start controlling, particularly time limits. onto phones. Things like blocking Snapchat, blocking Roblox, all of that. Roblox, blocking Fortnite, blocking Instagram, setting the internet off. Now, this is, we're kind of venturing into the area that I sort of more specialize in, which is paid products. But there's a lot you can do that is very affordable, that's way less than the price of one cup of coffee a week per annum.
It should just probably be seen as part of your kind of, I guess, internet package, you know, the safety of, and it's interesting because, Graham, when you talk about time limits, I actually think that's good for parents to have for themselves as well as children, you know, to know how much time that you're actually spending, but for most of us, it's probably too much.
Yeah, and there's a big push for something, and I think Facebook are calling it time well spent. And I mean, they say, Facebook, that they even have technology now. Now, they would say this, that they even have technology that spots when the user is getting a wee bit drowsy and has been connected too long, and that they try to encourage them to take a break. And that's a huge part of the addictive quality. I mean, that's the chocolate quality of the internet. It is addictive. And guess what? The people who own it make it addictive. That's their job. That's their job, to connect you, because that's how they're making money.
And that's the more how they time sell ads to you.
Yeah.
The more you look at, the more ads you see.
Yeah, so it is a struggle, and it's a learned habit. And we need to just step up a wee bit and recognise this is like crossing the road, driving a car. This is something that doesn't come naturally. It is in most of us. As they say, sitting is the new smoking. And what's going to make you sit the most is holding a device in your hand, doing the least, and being the least productive you can be, because you're in your chair at home having a cup of tea, browsing the net, and suddenly hours go by and you've not done very much.
In terms of just the other piece, because one part of it, Graham, is obviously installing different technologies that can help you monitor, block, all that sort of stuff. But how important is it for parents to also communicate? You know, you can't just install all these things and say nothing, but like talk as a family to their in an open way and saying, look, here's the reason why we're doing this. Are we talking enough amongst our families about this?
No. And you asked the question, so you already know the answer. No, of course we're not. The phones are becoming parents, and parents are as guilty and need to wise up to this as anybody. I mean, one of the things that our speakers always say is, look, it's not just us. It's not just our kids. It's us as well. You know, adults are walking down the road, bumping into each other, very antisocial, crossing the road all of the time, stuck in an iPhone. I mean, I just driving up here to get here for this interview, two young women crossed the road right in front of me near the centre there, both of them on their phone, expecting the traffic to slow down to meet their requirements.
Because they're looking at their phone.
Yeah, because they're looking. I mean, how bonkers is that?
It's a sad kind of indictment of the way the culture is going, because we're made for human interaction with one another, of course. And it's not to be totally negative, but it is sad when everybody's looking down instead of looking up at the world around them.
Yeah. Well, you can't start a friendship by looking at your phone. You do it as we are right now, which is looking one another in the eye and maybe getting a smile in and going from there. We can't do that on a phone. Now, there is, you know, for parents of older teenagers, there is new research, because one of the problems is the lack of proper research. And a lot of it is based on maybe pediatric advice and just sort of legacy advice from 10 years ago. But there is research now that says if you're a teenager spending a lot of time on Snapchat and socializing, that there might be less harmful effects than we think, and that it might actually be good. One of the things that Snapchat is great for is developing deep friendships. A, because it's private, and B, because they are there communicating with one another. It may be less than ideal, but perhaps it's not as bad. And this is research from Oxford, the Oxford Institute of the Internet, which is part of one of the universities there. And that's done on 20,000 UK students over the last 2 years. And that was just released towards the end of last year.
Wow, so it's a large body of research and really interesting to hear. So there is two sides to it. It's on the one hand, obviously you want to have one-to-one interaction, but also not always being totally negative about everything or being letting ourselves be overwhelmed. In terms of just some of the parental controls then, Graham, I think that, I'm sure, as the same as what's happening on the internet in terms of games and apps and Snapchats and all that sort of stuff, is probably advancing very fast as well. And a lot of parents might feel, will I even understand this stuff? Will I be able to install it? Is it all very complicated? What sort of, have you got kind of you know, parental controls for dummies that is really popular? Or what would you recommend as a starting point?
Well, the first piece of advice is to get on our site and give us a ring and we'll help you out. But that's an advertorial. So, but yes, we have a service where we will, particularly for people who hate tech but want to protect their kids, we have a service where when we do the sale with somebody or somebody buys the product, we listen to what the age of their children are, what the requirements are, we make suggestions, and we install it within 24 hours. Per child, per device. And
so you're looking at the specific needs of the family,
yeah,
basically.
So, and we're there to do that again when those needs change. Maybe a new app gets downloaded and it's not blocked, or there's no time control on it, or somebody just needs some advice, they can email us in or ring us in. Now, we don't give all of it away for free, but we identified a big need for people who dislike tech, just want to get the job done, know that they need to do this, all very affordable, and we've sort of packages aimed at very young families, kids in primary school, and for older children. And one other, for teenagers, I should say. And one general piece of advice in all of that is parents should not be afraid to have the battle with their teenagers about looking at their phones.
And saying no.
And both saying no and saying, you put your phone down at the end of each day and I will take a look at it in my own good time without you looking over my shoulder. Because where do teenagers ever get this idea or expectation that they're free to do as they like? Because the parents are responsible for the consequences. And I was only talking yesterday about some of the consequences on another radio station, on Instagram. So there's a novel thought most parents don't think. These kids never bought the phones, but you're responsible for them. They don't pay for
the data. Why are we not saying no, Graham?
They're just not. They don't want they don't want to take on their incredibly surly teenagers who think that they're entitled to privacy.
When it comes to what they're looking at on their phone.
Exactly, yeah. And this is one of the
things... Are we aware of the consequences?
No.
What are they?
Well, much of the activity that's out there, especially, say, hate messaging and that sort of thing, and any form of adult content, all of that's illegal and is already covered in law. And the guards can withdraw it, can take your phone off it, put it into evidence, and that's a phone the kids are never getting back. So mum or dad's going to have to fork out another €600 to buy another phone. But it is illegal. I mean, if kids think that you can have adult content circulating privately or streamed fights or other things or hate messaging, and that all of that's just a bit of crack, they might find it a bit of crack at the time when they're the one being picked on, it's not so funny. And they need to bear in mind all of the time that this is illegal and it's prosecutable by the Gardaí or the police.
Do you think where young people are aware enough of what goes online stays online?
No, they're not. This is they're not, and the guards in the Gardaí around the country and the police in Northern Ireland tell me they're sick to the back teeth of having to deal with all of this stuff. And the approach north and south of the border, and not so much in the UK, but the approach still north and south of our border is to try and keep a lid on it, keep it between the families. And the schools are trying to push the problem back out the gate of the schools. But the Gardaí will tell you they're dealing with this an awful lot. No, kids do not get the point that it's out there and can do irreparable damage to their online reputation and their futures. And even simple things like getting selected for county panels in GAA or rugby or soccer. If they think the coaches aren't looking at their online social media activity for their habits, are they late night drinkers? They're bonkers, of course, yeah. They are.
All these things are being kind of forensically analysed almost. I wanted to ask you about, I know that you've lots of different products obviously, Graham, but tell us a little bit about the Bitdefender.
Bitdefender, yes. Bitdefender is one of the most successful antivirus and parental control and banking products. It's one of the products we're featuring along with Kaspersky at the moment. Very robust, works really well on Google, on MacBooks, on PCs, and our installers really like installing it, and very effective. And
so what does it do?
Well, it's got one great feature. I mean, every product needs a standout feature. And it's got one great feature that we really like, which is the I'm Home button. So this is the button where the kid just touches one button on his/her screen, and that tells mum and dad the kid is home.
Wow, so it's so to really just help you monitor
just
it.
Every product needs a little standout feature, and that's one for Bitdefender. And there's one heck of a peace of mind for an awful lot of people right there that's not in other products. A kid doesn't have to do very much. Ding, I'm home.
And that's it. What about iKids? Tell us a little bit about that one.
iKids is a product that you install on the home Wi-Fi, and it's a physical product, so it's a once only buy and works really well. And its best feature is the dinner button, the one I like the best, which you can just press the dinner button and it jams all the Wi-Fi.
Jams everything for everybody, and
yes,
that includes mum and dad.
Yes,
so that,
and
it's interesting because it's by changing all of our behaviour, isn't it?
Yes, and you don't have to scream.
Yeah. Just the dinner button's on.
Yeah, because like you, the whole world is wearing headphones and earphones now, and they can't hear anything. And there's another fantastic tip. Tell your kids to start listening to the internet and to their music at 2 or 3, not 10, because they'll all be deaf by the time they're 30.
Yeah, and the warning comes up, doesn't it?
Yeah,
in terms of don't listen too loud.
Don't listen too loud. Again, the internet just wants you to listen, because then they can sell you stuff. The more time you're on YouTube, Google, Spotify, all of these companies rely on their ad income.
Do we need microphone blockers and camera blockers? There's always a lot of talk about, you know, our phones are listening, the laptop's listening, are they?
Yeah, you do. And you need listening devices, because how many times you heard people say that, God, I'd love to go to Spain for the holidays, and then suddenly you start getting Spanish ads. And the internet companies are busy telling us that they're not really listening. But yeah, they are, because they can listen. All of these channels are open. On that, most products, including Snapchat, have a feature in their general settings called microphone, and you just switch it off.
Switch those mics off.
But it's a great idea to stick, and we have them on our website, great idea to stick a jack into the phone to stop it listening, and your computer, because of course they're listening. The internet is about making money. The biggest internet companies, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, are the biggest companies on the international stock exchanges. And they're the most powerful companies with the most lobbying capability. And an awful lot of our pensions are now dependent on these companies, because they're the ones that have ridden the stock market boom of the last 10 years the most. So it's not going to be straightforward with all their lobbying power to get all of this sorted out.
Yeah, it's there's a huge amount of power and influence these companies have. Well, I've had some great advice today from Graham Mulhern from Be Secure Online. Summer, of course, is just around the corner, and I'm sure lots of you are trying to look at plans for the summer, and especially thinking of things for your kids or teenagers to do. Well, there's something great that's going to be happening for 14 to 18 year olds. And if you're involved in youth ministry, then also a date for your diary is the 5th of August, because a brand new youth festival is taking place from the 5th to the 9th of August in a fantastic venue in Colongaswood College, which is in County Kildare. It's called Move, and we're going to be hearing all about it. We have, I guess, the person who had the idea in the first place with us in studio, tell us all about it, Johan van der Fleer from Christ in Youth. Well, good morning, great to have you back with us, Johan. How are you?
Morning, well, yeah, doing well.
Alright, I think when we were chatting the last time, and forgive me if I have mom brain, but sometime recently when we were chatting, you were talking about research that had been done looking at kind of young people and their attitudes to faith. You had shared a little bit about just your experience of, you know, working with young people and, you know, going into schools and talking about God and just how positive the experience had been. And I know one of the things that you mentioned was that connecting up with events and festivals is really important in terms of that journey of faith. So is that why you thought, okay, I gotta make an event then for young people?
Yeah, it would be. Now, it wasn't just my idea. It is an organization that is 50 years old. So we're an international organization. We've been going for about 50 years, predominantly in the States, and then in other parts of the world, done stuff in India and Philippines as well. So the idea was not just my own idea, but it is something that I've had a huge experience with in my teenage years, and also my young adult years, where actually going away and experiencing God outside of the current environment that I'm in has been hugely impactful. And in fact, just to be able to see other people my age who actually want to love God and want to actually seek after Him in a passionate way.
And you feel, hey, oh, actually, I'm not alone. And there's lots of people who, you know, have the same passion for faith as I do. That's pretty important, isn't it? Just knowing that you're not alone.
Absolutely. You know, we can go after things by ourselves for only a certain amount of time. We really actually need to lean into people. That's why the church is so important, and that's why you want to serve the local church here in Ireland. I really believe that young people can have an individual walk with God, and that actually comes out when they celebrate that together with each other in church or in different organizations, different festivals. So that's kind of why we're wanting to go after things. We're really believing that young people are the future for the church here in Ireland, and we believe that's our job, our organization, other organizations, then also churches, local parishes, parents, youth worker volunteers. It's actually our job to be able to connect young people with their future, you know, and those, and draw out those unique gifts and talents and abilities that each individual has, you know. And oftentimes they don't really realize they have that until someone starts to draw that out of them and speak that encouragement into them, you know. So when I was a teenager, I remember a youth worker coming to our local area, and he just started to speak really encouraging things about me over my life. And actually I was like, oh, actually maybe I could actually be someone who could help lead things, I could do this, I could do that, when really before that I didn't really know what I was capable of. It actually took someone to draw that out of me in order for me to
and
start
build your confidence
and build confidence. So that's why I love events. It's a really cool thing to actually be able to see other people there who love God. It does build your confidence and your faith, so you can actually walk it out when you get out back into your normal environment, you know. So when I was a teenager, I would say my faith was quite timid, you know. I would have been a very inward faith. I wouldn't have been too confident of sharing it with people or any of that kind of stuff. But after experiencing other people, you know, around me that actually love God, I'm like, man, actually I can be a lot more confident in my faith. There's other people who love Jesus, and there's other people who want to express that as well. And you know, getting over the stuff like fear of man and what other people think and what other opinions think, I think,
which
is
hard.
Thing.
It's difficult.
A very hard
it's difficult
thing,
in lots of different aspects of our life. It's not just sharing our faith, but it's probably something that holds a lot of people back from doing lots of things. Just fear of what other people think, and that, you know, kind of pridefulness, I guess. So part of the vision of Christ in Youth is really kind of mobilizing and encouraging young people. Then,
yeah. We love the local church, and we love youth workers, and we want to be able to empower them to actually reach those young people as well. So, you know, our thing is not just about getting them into church. You know, that is a beautiful expression, and it's great to see young people in church, but we want them actually to be able to walk like an individual walk with God. You know, they wake up in the morning, pray, actually have conversation with God, and actually read the scriptures and understand them. You know, how many times when I was a teenager, I like opened the Bible and I was like, I'm going to close it again because I don't know how to read this. And we actually really want to be able to teach people and teach young people actually how to understand the scriptures, how they actually apply to their life.
And so it's really trying to encourage that type of active faith. And just as you're talking about it there, it strikes me that I think we can probably be all guilty of at times, you know, putting our faith in a box, you know. Oh, that's, I go to church on Sunday and that's that little part of my life. But actually, if we had an active faith throughout our day, well, then obviously our friendships would be better, our work relationships would be, lots of things about our day would be better if we tried to, you know, call on God to be part of our day rather than just there on a Sunday.
Absolutely. We really believe that God is the true source of encouragement and empowerment, and we really want to see young people empowered to be able to live out those gifts and abilities. And we really believe that that comes through individual response to God on a daily basis.
And that relationship.
And relationship. So for me, that's the most special thing about all this, is that we can connect young people in an individual way to relationship with God. It's not just about an event with a load of lights and stage and flash and all that kind of stuff. That's part of it, and that's a way to get people to that point, but that's why we do it, is in order to get them to that place where they can have, oh, I can have a really cool relationship with God, and it's actually more than just, you know, the big kind of fellow up in the sky, you know, and
a personal relationship. So tell us about MOVE then. What's it going to be like?
So yeah, MOVE, we want to be able to mobilize young people to connect into those gifts and the talents and abilities. And you know, what we're trying to do is create something where it's going to be an interdenominational event where young people from all different source streams, and then whether or not they've been in church or not been in church in their lives, actually be able to come and actually find a safe place for them to discover God.
So really accessible wherever people are at.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to create a safe environment and also a fun environment for young people to come. So we've been doing these events for the last 50 years, and this is our first one we're doing here in Ireland.
So you're learning from what Christ in Youth have been doing all over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, we run camps and events for like 90,000 teens every summer in the States. It's quite a large-scale event. You know, we do between 700 and 3,000 kids per event, and we really try to do like a really intentional program, take them through. So the idea is that young people don't just come by themselves, they come with their youth worker. so that there's something that they can feed back into when they go home. So
and connect up with that. It's not, you're not just kind of on a high and then it's like, what do I do now?
Exactly. Yeah. So we're not just about camp highs and then going home and then waiting until the next year for them to experience God again in a deep way. We want them actually to be able to apply it to their lives with these youth workers and experience it with these youth workers, and these youth workers actually know, oh, this is what my young person is going through, this is what my young person has discovered about God, and this is how I can actually walk with them beyond the event. So we're really excited about the possibilities here in Ireland. We really, you know, what we love MOVE to be is actually a sparking point for young people to encounter God, but then also a sparking point for the church to be able to sow into the next generation in a new way, whether that be through prayer and support and actually providing volunteers and people or finances and paid youth workers. We'd love to see that. There, in many areas of the country, there is good culture of youth work, but in many areas there is non-existent.
And there needs to be more of a recognition on investing in that, really, as in providing that support through youth workers and young people. I think that's probably because there's sadly a misconception that young people aren't interested, but that is definitely not the case.
No, I think they very much are, and ultimately it is about creating environments where they feel free to express themselves and that they're going to enjoy. I think sometimes what we are guilty of, the older generation, is that we create these environments that we feel safe and we feel are going to be the places where these young people are going to encounter God and learn and discover Him, when actually we're realizing young people are developing beyond the things that we knew when we were young. So how can we create these new environments and be creative and give them opportunity to actually, like, oh, this is fun, this isn't just like my grandmother or my parents' faith, this
take
is,
me along by the ear to whatever it is. So what will a day at MOVE look like then, Johan?
So a day at MOVE, so MOVE is a 5-day event, and it's for 14 to 18 year olds and their youth workers come with them. So
the idea is that a youth worker from a church or a parish or whatever will bring a group or a few people or whatever.
Or the local area or whatever. It doesn't have to be a church, but it is obviously a faith-based program. So it's a week-long experience. It's all-inclusive, so that includes food and accommodation. It's in the lovely grounds of Clongowes Wood College in Kildare. It's a lovely old boarding school. Some people are calling it Hogwarts, you know, that kind of thing. But they have lovely swimming pools and rugby pitches and all this kind of stuff. So it's a really amazing environment. Really believe that if a young person comes along, they're going to have a really good time, you know, regardless of, you know, program or anything. They're just going to really love the environment. So what we've done is we've created a really intentional program. We've been working on the program for the last, you know, I think since October. So the idea is that a young person will be taken through this really intentional program and small groups. So it'll be dynamic teaching and worship and all that kind of stuff. And there'll be fun and games in the afternoon, and a lot of different kind of competitions that really, you know, get young people excited and that kind of thing throughout the week. So we have a bunch of really cool speakers coming in. We have a great worship leader coming in from the north of Ireland, guy who heads up Worship Central, Ryan Griffiths. So we're excited. We think that if a young person comes along, they're really going to actually be challenged through the interactive worship, through the teaching and all that kind of stuff, challenged actually to take steps in their own faith, you know, and then actually be able to get to spend quality time with their group. And that's the big thing for us.
And make new friends as well.
And make new friends. So,
is there a cost involved then, kind of per head?
Yeah, so the cost is $250 for the full week.
Oh,
so
that's all the meals,
all the food and all that kind of stuff. What we're trying to do is not just make just a really cheap event for people to come through and then that fizzles out after a
few
years.
Do it right, but you're just covering your costs with that. I'd imagine what people are getting just in terms of those 5 nights away, and it's for all Christian denominations, for teenagers from 14 to 18, wherever they're at in their faith. It sounds like it's going to be a brilliant week. You've shared a little bit, Johan, just the impact these events have had on you. We've had so many people over the years talk about different youth festivals, youth retreats, all that sort of stuff. It's a big part of really trying to help young people learn and discover their faith, but also I think, please God, the youth workers that attend will get a lot out of it as well, in terms of being able to, as you say, bring that wisdom and hopefully joy back to wherever they're doing their work.
Yeah, so for us it's not just about the event, we want it to go beyond the event. So what we'd love to be is that, you know, organizations such as ourselves and other organizations are doing things around the country, whatever we are running, we'd hope that those different events or camps would be actually a celebration that comes together of all the good work that's happening throughout the year. So we don't want it just to be an event that happens and then kids wait and until the next time to actually experience that. We want to be able to resource youth workers so that when they go back home, they're like, I know what to do with my young people. I don't just have to like show up and try to get them there, get the pizza. You know, there's actually stuff to be able to teach them, stuff to be able to equip them, and actually give them opportunity to express themselves, you know.
Yeah, and all of my take as a youth worker or just someone who's very dynamic. I know, for example, I'm thinking of a local church in my area where they just got a young guy on their parish pastoral council, and he's done loads of cool stuff for young people, you know, and sometimes that's all it takes is one person with energy to try and get people together and get moving on something. Excuse the pun, given the name of the event. If you just join me, I've been talking to Johan van der Vlier, and he's been talking all about MOVE, which is going to be taking place from the 5th of August for 5 days in County Kildare in Clongowes Wood. It's a summer residential event for 14 to 18 year olds. It sounds like it's going to be a brilliant few days. It's hosted by Christ in Youth, and it's a real opportunity for young people and youth leaders from across the country to just really grow in their faith and be part of that kind of, I guess, revival of faith, which I think young people have to be at the heart of in Ireland, which is so, so important. If you want to get more information, you can go to their website, ciy.com/Ireland. Johan van der Vlier, thanks for joining us on Spirit Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now for our Prayer Coach series to continue today, and today we're talking about seeing things from a fresh perspective. So what about if you're perhaps, I don't know, stuck in a rut? It could even be just seeing your own local area from a different perspective, seeing a particular issue or problem, or maybe a person from a fresh perspective, and how that can have such a positive impact on your life. Well, to help us through this topic and looking at it through spiritual eyes, we have Gary McDowell, minister at Greystones Presbyterian, with us in studio today. Well, Gary, happy Easter to you. How did Easter go?
Easter was fantastic. Yes, good to see you, Wendy. How was your Easter?
It was really, really good. And one of the things that I got to enjoy, I was telling the gang out here yesterday, was we were down in County Wexford, beautiful part of the country, and in my parents' holiday home. So usually, I think any parents with young toddlers will know that going to church can be a challenge in terms of actually absorbing what's happening, yeah, and, you know, listening to the minister or the priest or whatever. And so we got to go to the Easter vigil, myself and my husband, because baby was babysat, and just enjoy this beautiful part of Easter. And that was a fresh perspective for me in quite a while, because yeah, I was really able to try and concentrate and take it all in. Mm-hmm. And better than any date night for us, so it was. So that was lovely and a blessing to be able to do that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we had a lovely Easter as well. We had our two girls who live in Belfast on with us. It was really nice. And went swimming for the second time ever in the sea off Greystones.
I know the weather was warm, but the sea was cold.
The sea was absolutely ice cold.
How long did you stay in for?
You could measure it in seconds.
Yeah,
rather than
minutes. So then it wasn't actually, you know, swimming lengths of the sea. It was that's called a dip, not a swim.
Yeah. But it was up to my neck, not over my head, but up to my neck.
Okay, so yeah.
But it was cold, but at least you felt a sense of achievement that you'd actually done it.
And you feel alive. So you want to talk today about seeing things from a fresh perspective, and something has got you thinking about this in particular.
Yeah, just over the last couple of days we've been doing a lot of walking because the weather has been so beautiful. I'm sure no matter what part of the country you're in, everyone loves to see the sun. It's beautiful. So we went out walking, that we like to do occasionally. But just yesterday, we came to Bray, and we stopped here, and there's a cross at the top of the hill for anybody kind of who knows this part of the world. And we walked up to the cross. It's not very far. It takes about 20 minutes, but it's pretty steep. And when you're really old and decrepit like me, you're puffing and blowing. But we made it to the top. We felt this real sense of achievement. And usually we come back down again, straight down. But this time we've met some people, and they say, oh, you've got to do this other walk. So we turned right, and we headed towards Greystones, where we live, where our church is. Well, but we've never done this walk before. And if anyone doesn't know this part of the country, County Wicklow is the place to be.
It's called the Garden of Ireland for a reason.
It's the most beautiful place in the world,
And Brayhead, where you're talking about, where there's a cross on top, and a lot of people would obviously climb it, but they would do things like Stations of the Cross on the walk up there, mm-hmm, and prayers and various different things. But it is a tough climb, but for a relatively short climb, you get a great reward. So you can see the sea, first of all, but you can see out as far as Howth in North County Dublin, mm-hmm, and a little bit stretching towards Arklow in Wicklow as well, Arklow Wexford at that point probably. And it's just absolutely stunning. But it's funny, isn't it, because as you say, Gary, this is on your doorstep literally, and you hadn't discovered this beauty before. Are we walking around sometimes with our eyes closed, not just to the nature and the beauty beauty that's on our doorstep, but also to God.
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, we often walk on the beach down at Greystones, which is lovely in itself, just looking by the sea, and it's just gorgeous. Often get the Dart from Greystones into Bray or into Dublin, which you get another perspective on that train line, which is really lovely. But frequently we do the walk, which is a world famous walk from Bray to Greystones.
Lots of tourists do it. They get the Dart out.
You hear lots of different languages on that. It is so beautiful. And just last week we did it from Greystones to Bray and then came back. Isn't that really impressive? Both ways, Wendy.
Did you have a bag of chips at the end, though?
We had lunch in the middle, which is very nice in Bray, this lovely restaurant. So it was beautiful, but yesterday we did this other walk and we had a tour at Greystones, which is quite high up, and suddenly you could look down and you could see the Bray to Greystones path that we normally walk on that we think is very high. But suddenly it seemed like miles above that as well, looking down, and you could look down the path that we normally walk, and you could see the train line beyond that and the beach beyond that. You just had a whole new perspective. And it was the loveliest day. It was early in the morning, so the sun hadn't come out properly yet, but the sky was gorgeous. There was this mist hanging across the sea, and the ocean just seemed bigger than I'd ever remembered it before. It was just huge. And that's really what it made me think of, seeing the world from God's perspective. In Ephesians, Paul writes that, "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, in order that you may know the hope to which he's called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe." And so often the Bible's talking about the hugeness of the world, you know, the nations of the world are like a drop in the bucket to God, or the oceans are just vast, and that's like his love. And yet we can so easily just plod along our usual path of life, and we hear the news, or our own life, or our career, or our health, or our family. All of these things can begin to crush us and trap us.
Get stuck in a rut.
You do. And so many things to worry about, so many things to stress about. And suddenly, to stand up there and to think of God saying, you know, try to say, my ways are not your ways. My perspective is not your perspective. The BBC are started a new program called, Earth from Space. Have you seen it? I think it's only had one episode. But instead of just seeing elephants on the ground with a David Attenborough kind of commentary, suddenly you can see it from a satellite view.
And it looks so different.
It looks a totally different perspective. Fantastic, the colours, the design, everything about it just looks different and fresh. And this is our world. And God sees our world kind of from that perspective as well. We see the nitty-gritty and we stress. But God sees the big picture and says, you know, just like Paul says, I want you to see with eyes of faith, that they can be opened, and you will see the inheritance that I have for you. You can see the hope of all this. And even though things look a bit messy in your life or in the world, if you see things from my perspective, you'll see it with hope and with a purpose, and somehow God is sovereign, God is in control.
And it can actually have a huge impact on those stresses, those worries, those fears, when you try to look at things through God's eyes. But it's not easy. Sometimes there can be a moment, I certainly had when sitting on the beach just watching my son and my husband filling a bucket with stones and throwing them in the sea, and it was just lovely to watch them playing together, but just so simple as well. It costs nothing. And you kind of get this slap in the face of going, think of all the worldly silly things you've been worrying about, or whatever they are. How do you do that though on a daily basis, you know, seeing the world more through God's eyes and seeing yourself through God's eyes as well?
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's kind of been displayed. It's a spirit thing, because naturally we look inward and we look downward. I think, at least maybe I'm just talking about myself. We look inward and we look downward, and you can get despondent so easily. And I suppose it's just being aware that there's other perspectives, and seeing, make sure we're not looking at things through the eyes of fear, or the eyes of the baggage that we have within our own lives, but kind of shaking those things off and asking God by His Spirit to take away the scales from our eyes and let us see clearly. I mean, Joseph, back in Genesis, remember that story where his brothers hated him and they got rid of him and he ended up far, far away. But God had a plan at the very end of that story, when he's reunited with his brothers and they're kind of frightened at, because he's now a man of opposition and of power. But he was able to say to them, look, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And he was able to save many people because of the position that he had and because of the insights that God had given him. And there was that great famine in Egypt, but he was able to save many. So he was able to say it, you know, this was a hard time. I wouldn't have chosen this for myself. I want to be loved by my family, not feared and hated by my family, and not sent to a strange country. But somehow in the big picture, God had it for good. God meant it for good. And that's not easy, but it's something I think that we need to, for our own sanity, to actually know that God is on our side. And Paul talks about that great inheritance that he has for us. That's not just words, but actually when we follow Jesus, he has given us this amazing gift of himself. And God sees us as his sons and daughters.
I often wonder, is Jesus looking at us, at me in particular, as my mother always says to me, stop worrying about so many different things. Is he going, Wendy, I can't believe you're worrying about whatever it is, you know? I've got this. You know, you're in the palm of my hand. Don't worry.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that's the great joy of Easter. Easter gives us a new perspective on everything. Because if Jesus truly was resurrected, if he was dead and now he lives, that changes everything, doesn't it? Because he says, because I live, you can live. Just trust me. And so whatever's going on in our lives, our world, in a sense, this world is not our home. We're just are just passing through. Like, I'm going to break into song. We're just passing
through. That's all right.
Yeah. Well, I'll do that one of these days. And that's true. The inheritance that we have is just an eternity with God. It's going to be amazing. A few weeks ago, I spoke about heaven in church and talked about like Revelation chapter 5, which is focusing on the throne with the Lamb on it. You know, Jesus is going to be there. We're going to see him. It's going to be immense. So there's this wonderful goal that we've got, this purpose that we have, and this is where our lives are moving towards us in faith. It's by his grace. It's got nothing to do with us. But Easter, which we can just bypass so easily, but it's about life. It's about real life, life in all its fullness that he gives to all of us.
Which he wants us to have, and we often forget that and get bogged down and
just grasp it. Yeah.
Things that are maybe don't feel trivial at the time, but in the big picture they certainly are. Really good advice as always today from our prayer coach, who has been Reverend Gary McDowell, with us today from Greystones Presbyterian Church in County Wicklow. I'm sure lots of people now, Gary, will be thinking of doing the Braid to Greystones walk.
Come and do the walk. We'll walk together. It'll be, lots of people do it. It's the most beautiful
it's
walk
lovely.
To do.
Yeah, take time out. No phones. Say a few prayers. It'll be great. Have you ever struggled to find the right music for leading worship in your church, for enriching your church services? Well, our next guest is in the UK and he's director of a digital platform that aims to take the hard work out of finding suitable material for music within church. In studio to tell us more, on the line I should say, about We Are Worship and technological advances which are shaping us in how we will use music in our church services, we have Duncan Reid, director of We Are Worship in the UK. Duncan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy. How are you?
So Duncan, tell us just a little bit about yourself first.
I'm Duncan, and I'm based in Bristol, which is in the southwest of England. And I actually work for a company called Integrity Music, which is a large Christian music publishing company, and have done for a couple of years. And I actually have the privilege these days of running a site for Integrity called We Are Worship, which is all about helping worship leaders find worship songs, learn to play them, and how to lead them in their churches.
So tell us a little bit about We Are Worship. Explain it to me.
Yeah, so with We Are Worship, we know that worship leaders, you know, really struggle with three kind of key areas in, as they're planning and then leading their churches in worship. And that's, you know, first of all, it's in just finding songs. You know, it can sometimes be really hard just to come up with a fresh list of songs and, you know, kind of have the appropriate songs at the, you know, at the right time. And it can be really hard to discover songs in, you know, in the first place. And we want to take the stress out of that so that, you know, worship leaders can actually get on with, you know, learning to play those songs. And we also help worship leaders do that by having resources on the site, like chord charts and sheet music in every key that you need, and we have videos to help worship leaders learn to play songs. And we've also then got a technology on our website, wearworship.com, where worship leaders can then use it as a worship leading app, whether they're on or offline, which is a key consideration, I think, for worship leaders. Is many churches don't have Wi-Fi. We've actually developed a website that can work without Wi-Fi or the internet working in your church. So we've really tried to develop a site that is there to make worship leading and kind of planning it as convenient as possible, so that, you know, people who are given the task of leading their churches in worship really can actually spend the precious time that they have actually worshiping.
In terms, Duncan, then, of the kind of level of expertise from a music perspective that you need to have in order to be able to use the platform, what sort of level is it aimed at?
Well, so that's a great question, really. I mean, what we know is that so 94% of churches are churches of under 500 people. And with that being the case, you know, a lot of people end up leading worship in their churches, you know, especially with, you know, 73% of churches being under 200 people, is that oftentimes people aren't necessarily kind of vocational worship leaders, or even, you know, or even that music is their first passion, but they're leading worship is that something that is really important for the lives of their churches, and they're kind of stepping up into that volunteer role to do that. And we want to empower those people. We want to empower the people for whom, worship leading isn't their, you know, their first, you know, or music isn't their biggest passion. They might not be the best guitar player or best keyboard player, and we want to help them. So actually, it's all about helping musicians of all levels. If you already know how to play your chords, then actually we can just give you the chords. But if you need that extra bit of help, if you need, you know, help to be able to transpose songs and find out how to play them, you know, then we're here for you. We really want to be able to help you.
And that's there for you there as well. And what about, it's not just a song, but you're also helping churches to source material as well.
Absolutely. So it's not just about hearing the songs, but it's resourcing how to learn those songs. So if they want to have we have videos on the site and tutorials from, you know, oftentimes from the songwriters themselves, from, you know, a lot of these songs, and we've got over 9,000 songs on our website, you know, so it's all the songs you might expect from all the big churches in the, you know, in the US and UK, but also all around the world. We really want to facilitate not just, you know, the American and UK church, but this is about the world. So we've got songs on the site from all over the world, from from Africa, from India, from a lot of them. We've got a lot of songs from kind of continental Europe, which we're really excited about sharing, you know, sharing around the world. And so we'll help users to discover those songs by, you know, filtering the songs out in different song lists. So, we just had Easter, and our Easter song list is massively popular on site, really helping worship leaders discover, you know, the right song to play at the right time for their church.
So it's really using technology to just enrich worship, isn't it, Duncan?
Well, absolutely. That's the thing is we do have these amazing, a lot of us amazing old church buildings that we've inherited, which is a wonderful blessing. But being able to use new technology to bring our worship to a new level, I think that's something that we're really keen that we want to see. Develop and continue to develop. So some people say we're a bit like Spotify for worship leaders, and it's just about making that process quick and easy as possible. It's about making that, you know, that preparing worship task not be an onerous task we don't look forward to, but something that actually is life-giving and is quick and easy, and technology is a key part of that. You know, through the centuries, you know, we've had different technologies have kind of enabled us to do that. So, you know, the advent of the printing press, all of a sudden we were able to replicate, you know, sheet music and share that around, and that was used through three churches. And then, kind of, you know, we had hymns, ancient and modern, and then more recently Songs of Fellowship. So this is kind of the next evolution of that, of us being able to kind of create a songbook for the global church. And technology is great for that, you know. And most people have got a smartphone these days, or a laptop, or maybe even an iPad, and we can you know, using those devices, we're making it as easy as it's ever been. We hope to find, to learn, and to lead worship in churches.
So you don't need to be a techie whiz either, then, Duncan, to be able to use that.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely. In fact, we know that most of our users actually are slightly older and potentially not as technologically proficient, shall we say. So actually, we've done our best just to make the site just as easily and usable and intuitive as possible, so that you don't have to be a tech whiz to come to it. And find songs. So yeah. We're constantly trying to innovate to make it as easy as possible to use.
Well, it sounds like a great platform indeed, and should enrich worship all over the world. Duncan, thanks so much for joining us on the programme this morning. That's Duncan Reid, Director of We Are Worship. Thanks. It was just really, really interesting. That's just how technology can just enrich what we're trying to do. And you can find out more at weareworship.com.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.